John Naka is internationally recognized as the preeminent bonsai artist of the 20th century. A second-generation Japanese-American, Naka was born on August 16, 1914, in Brighton, Colorado. Growing up on his father's farm, Naka remembered drawing as a favorite pastime. Illustrating became an important step in Naka's development as a bonsai artist, as he would plan his intended design before working with the actual trees. He was attracted to bonsai as an art form because there is a beginning, but never an ending. The art is forever changing as long as the living tree continues to grow. When his paternal grandmother died, Naka and his father moved to Japan to care for his grandfather, Sadahei. That first year in Japan, his father had to translate conversations between Grandpa and his young grandson. When Naka's father was unavailable to translate, however, the two learned to understand each other through observation. In particular, Naka enjoyed watching his grandfather at the bonsai table. The two became close, and Naka revered Sadahei, from whom he learned many things. In addition to learning about bonsai art, he memorized Japanese proverbs told by his grandfather and began to have a deep understanding of the traditional views and philosophies of his ancestors. Before long, Naka's grandfather invited the young boy to become his apprentice in bonsai. In the early days of his apprenticeship, Naka tended to the weeds and watered the trees of his grandfather's projects. After some time, Sadahei gave Naka a small pine tree and challenged him to create something of his own. When Naka accidentally dropped the pot that held his tree, the branches broke into many pieces. Sadahei encouraged his frustrated grandson to take what was left and to start from there. Naka followed his grandfather's instructions and completed his first tree. Naka made many trees after that first one, and by the time he was in sixth grade, the young boy was considered to be a skilled bonsai artist. In 1926, Sadahei died. Naka continued his bonsai practice and learning Japanese culture and languages, becoming fluent in both Japanese and Chinese. After studying landscape design, Naka was offered a scholarship to a prestigious art school in Japan. However, at that time, there was political unrest in Japan, and it was clear that the country would soon be engaged in war. Naka was of military age, and his family feared that he would be drafted into the Japanese military. It was decided during a family meeting that Naka would return to the United States to live with his brother in Colorado. In 1935, at the age of 21, he returned to the United States. Shortly thereafter, he met and married Alice. And after working on the family farm with his brother for 10 years, Naka and his wife decided to move to Los Angeles in 1946. Naka established a successful lawn business featuring specialized Japanese landscaping. He ran the business until 1968. During these years, he pursued bonsai art, and through the 50s and 60s, Naka became recognized throughout the country as a refined bonsai artist. With four other bonsai artists, Naka organized the Southern California Bonsai Club. In 1958, he co-founded a bonsai club in Orange County, which today is known as the California Bonsai Society. Naka and his work with these organizations are credited for the increase in widespread interest in the art form. His work, the John Y. Naka North American Bonsai Pavilion, became the focal point of what is now the National Bonsai and Penjing Museum at the U.S. National Arboretum. His work can also be seen at the Museum of Modern Art in Caracas, Venezuela. Naka was honored with the Fifth Class Order of the Rising Sun in 1958 from Emperor Hirohito of Japan. In 1992, he was awarded a National Heritage Fellowship from the National Endowment for the Arts. He died at age 89 on May 19, 2004. Words from the Study, American Folk Art by Kristen Congdon and Kara Hallmark, profiling John Naka, who did so much to further the art of bonsai in America. We're about to meet two bonsai artists who are well aware of John Naka and who work, as he did, to cultivate the art in our region. Carl Ockhammer Jr., founding member, and James Gavern, president of the Northeast Pennsylvania Bonsai Society, stopped in at the WVIA studios to invite us to the group's annual open house on Saturday, August 23rd in Exeter. Carl began with some history.
The art started back in the day in China, maybe 1,200 years ago. The Chinese had always had a great appreciation for nature and building little landscapes in trays. When they did the art, it was known more as penjing, and that's little multiple trees and stones and maybe even little figures in a tray or in a pot. And by the time it got to Japan, they put one tree into a container, and then bonsai became the name of it. Penjing and bonsai are basically synonymous, but it's a little difference, a little nuances. But then trade war, Zen Buddhism, World War II saw the art traveling all over Europe. And we finally got it, like I said, after World War II into the U.S. when the servicemen would bring these little trees back from the Pacific Theater. And then, you had a lot of Japanese people moving into the California area. A lot of teachers, they set up nurseries, started teaching. And, most prominent like Ben Oki and John Naka. They started teaching there, and then it just grew across to the east and over on the East Coast now. We have beautiful, tons of different arboretums have bonsai collections now. The National Collection is in D.C. at the Arboretum, and that was a gift of 25 trees for our bicentennial in 76, and that's what started it there. And now there's a North American pavilion, a Chinese pavilion, and a Japanese pavilion at the Arboretum. And all the artists that I've been growing up with for the last 20, 30 years are starting to donate trees to that collection, which is excellent.
1,200 years ago, or when the initial art was being developed in China and then in Japan, would the artists go out into nature and harvest trees? Is that how it would go initially?
Yeah, so I would say that, there's a few schools of thought about how exactly it started and why it started. Some say that in China it was used as a way of surveying properties by the king, so they would create these little dioramas that would show properties owned by the king. Some say as people moved into cities and into ancient capitals, they wanted to bring a piece of nature with them, so they brought small trees and rocks and things that would, mimic what they saw out in the deeper nature. And then there's also a theory that in order to keep medicinal plants at hand, ancient China and ancient Japan have a very strong history of using medicinal herbs and medicinal plants as medicine. And so sometimes they'd be very difficult to get, and you'd have to go out into nature very, very far away to get them, to harvest them. So there's a theory that ancient medicinal plants were kept in pots as a way to keep them close to people when they needed to use them. So there's a variety of schools of thought about why they started taking them. But yes, most of them were pulled from nature.
And you used the word, James, why. Why, Carl, were you drawn to this art originally?
I'm still trying to quantify that every day. But as I go along thinking about it, it was just fun to have. Somebody got me one for a present for a birthday, and I was just intrigued by it. And as I've grown in the art and met a bunch of people, I understand it's the community and surrounded by an art form that brings people together, that's very attractive. That's probably what keeps me coming back. If I was just going to do it for myself, it'd be fun. But, I like to share the art with people. And there's people in our industry that love to do that. Some people don't like to, and they like to enjoy it themselves, which is no problem. But it's great. If you have a good piece of material and a beautiful bonsai, let's see it. Let's share it with people. Tell people the history, how you got it. Did you collect it yourself? Did you get it from somebody? I think the stories of each tree how you got it or where it's from are very important too.
James, what drew you and how do you respond to Carl's story?
So I'd have to say, they say everybody's first memory has a tree involved in some way. So I've read that in a few psychological books. They say usually people, their first memory in life has something to do with a tree or something to do with nature. So I think that was certainly the case for me. My father was an arborist growing up. He's since become a construction worker, but you know, the first formative years of my life, he was always climbing trees. So later in life, and I would sit with him and watch him, you know, study and learning the different foliar structures of different trees and how to treat this disease and that disease. And he would bring the bucket truck into our neighborhood and let the kids go up into the air 100 feet. So I always had a soft spot for trees. And then when I was at college, I had a Japanese teacher who gave me a bonsai as a gift. We started talking about bonsai in class. And from there, I was kind of hooked. I wanted to learn what there was to bonsai. I knew I loved trees, but the bonsai was calling to me. The minimalism of it, the wabi-sabi of it, all of these, you know, deep philosophical movements behind, you know, the essence of bonsai really drew me to it. And, you know, just from there, I started studying it. And it gives me a way to connect with nature. It's a way to bring nature inside. It's a way to, you know, share growth. You're growing as your trees are growing. You're having an impact on their growth, and they're having an impact on your growth. They help you center yourself. And, you know, for me, it's just been about, you know, centering myself, and it reminds me of childhood, and it's just a combination of all those things, really. It's an amalgamation of that, yeah.
Yeah, as you say that, I can remember the two big chestnut trees in our front yard cut down 20 years ago, but climbing in those, the pine trees across the street, which have been, you know, cut down a long time ago, and then even the tire swing in my backyard off the plum tree, which kind of deteriorated and fell down. But yeah, I can remember being outside playing, and you know, I'm wondering if that's why, you know, there's a lot of guys in this art now. There's a lot of girls starting to get into this, but maybe that's why we're all outside playing in the dirt, surrounded by trees, running through the woods, playing war, doing it. Maybe that's what attracts the men predominantly in here in our art. But like I said, we are starting to see some great women artists, and it's good. We want everybody involved.
Yeah. And you had the great fortune to actually go to an international conference in the epicenter of the art.
Yeah, in 2017, I was able to go to Japan to see the World Bonsai Convention. I think it was the 9th one. Started about 35 years ago in Saitama City, and we saw the Van Goghs and the Picassos of the bonsai world. Mind-blowing, and stuff from the Imperial Palace and collections that nobody's ever seen in public before. So, yeah, that was a humbling experience, too. I was walking around there, and I almost quit, saying, I don't know if I could do this as well. But, yeah, actually, I saw that show in 2005 when my brother was in D.C. The World Convention was in D.C. in 2005, and I just happened to be there. So I've been fortunate to see it twice.
Carl, you talk about sometimes listening to music and getting in a zone when you're working on your trees, and that's what you sort of suggested, James. If there is growth in the number of people who might be drawn now to bonsai, would it have to do with the need we now seem to have for a centering and peace when we're all so digitally directed? What do you think?
Absolutely. I think it's a way of bringing us back to reality. You know, I often think that people spend way too much time on their phones and on their computers and things like that. And, you know, bonsai is just, it's a way to escape the addictiveness of social media and all these things, and really spend time with yourself alone. Ask yourself questions that you may not have had the time to think of before, or, you know, learn a bit about who you are through the art. You know, for instance, Carl was talking about having gone to the convention in Japan. I went to in 2023, I think it was, or 2024. I went to the national convention. And, you know, I was also impressed by, you know, the trees there and just the sheer number of just gorgeous and beautiful pieces of art. But at the same time, in the back of my mind, I was always thinking, I might have moved that branch that way, or I might have done this that way, or I would have used this kind of rock, because it is such a personal thing, and it is such a, you know, your creativity can shine through in those little tweaks that you would make that maybe somebody else wouldn't think to make. So it does help you find that creativity and that center. Yeah.
Yeah. The national show is happening again this year in September. It's up in Rochester by one of our pioneers, Bill Valvanis. he's been in the art for 40, 50 years, been to Japan multiple times, and his show runs every 2 years, and now there's a Pacific show that runs on a counter year of that. So there's a ton of bonsai shows around, the Midwest show, the Mid-Atlantic show. They happen every, from May to December, somewhere around you. Even if it's just a local club show like ours, there's a ton of them popping up right now, and it's great to see. The art's just on an exponential growth.
I asked you last time you were here, James, I think, do you have a conversation with your tree? It's alive, and you have some sense of that. How is that? I'm sure it's not easy to describe, but is there a bond? What is that?
I would say absolutely. As I'm watching the tree do what trees do, I learn what trees do, if that makes sense. In other words, I learn how they grow, and I learn what they like, and that they have personalities just like, you know, a living person would or an animal would. This tree likes this thing. This tree likes this amount of water and this amount of sun and to be placed here. So there is like an ongoing, you know, conversation with the tree. And as the tree grows, I see the effort that I've put into it shining in the tree. You know, if I've done something incorrectly or I've done something wonderful, the tree lets me know. It lets me know that I made a mistake or I did something great. So it's a feedback loop with the tree that, you know, day in, day out and year in, year out, you're seeing your efforts reflected back at you from the tree.
Do you have an example of that, Carl, where you may have done something that surprises you, but it was right?
That's a good statement and a good thing to make me think about that. Do I talk to my trees enough? I don't know. I water them some days and I just leave them alone. But over the last, maybe 5 or 10 years, I've seen trees come into fruition that, you started 15 years ago, and the maturity and the level, they are bonsai, at the highest level. It's nice to see that because you don't always see the end result, and you don't have to look at that. You have to look at the journey with bonsai, and when you get the end result, you're like, wow, hey, I did this, and I can do it just like the pros do it, and I'm making some nice trees now, and now I'm like, what am I going to do for the next 10 years with other ones?
When you're talking about time spans of a decade, patience is essential.
Yeah, that's one of my first apprentices. He learned that real quick after we did the first tree. We styled it, trimmed it, and repotted it. And he's like, now what I would do with it? I was like, well, now you just go home and let it grow for 2 to 3 months. He's like, really? And that's also part of the addicting part. So what do? You go get another tree, do the same thing. And then you let that grow for 2 to 3 months or 6 months even. Some trees we don't touch. We touch once a year. I mean, it's a day-to-day watering schedule, so you have to make sure you don't kill the tree by letting it dry out. And of course, there's fertilizing, but the actual trimming on the tree is every couple months sometimes. Pines, you work on one thing a year. Junipers, maybe prune once or twice. Maples, a little more. Tropical trees, a little more. But other than that, you work on it and you just let it go and enjoy it. It needs to be in the sun. It needs to produce photosynthesis, and that stuff you don't see. The tree just needs to kind of be left alone, for a bit too.
Yeah, I would say too, there's a versatility within the amount of time and patience that goes into the tree, depending on what your end goal is or what you're aiming for. I like mame, which is the smallest version of bonsai, and you can get a finished tree in 2, 3, 4 years. Starting with a cutting and then, using all of your techniques to get it into shape and getting it look the way you want. But some of the larger bonsai trees, some of the like imperial size, can be worked on for hundreds of years. So there is a personal preference there for what exactly you're aiming for with your tree and how much patience you have for it.
And Carl, I always like it when you describe to us about imagining yourself in a tiny way under the tree. You know what I'm referring to.
Yeah, when you've been working on a tree for a while and you have it in the right pot and you have little moss on the soil and it looks just like a big tree. I tell people, if you could picture yourself 1 inch or 2 inches high walking underneath this tree and just almost imagining that you're out in nature, I think you've accomplished the art at a higher level. Once you create that picture, that old picture, I should say, that's going to make you reminisce of the time when you're walking around in a forest or, in my backyard with the tree with the tire swing. Now for the mames, you have to picture yourself like at 1 centimeter high. But yeah, that's our goal, is to make this ancient picture out of something that might not be all that old. So if you can make your 10-year-old tree that's only a foot high, make it look like it's 100 years old and 100 feet high, then you've accomplished the art. That's our goal into accomplishing the art at a higher level.
Introduce us to the society.
Now, the club has been around for over 40 years. 88, I believe, we started at a local nursery. And over those years, it's just grown. And I think everybody in the last 10 years, the trees have just been getting a lot better. We have more on display this year. We also included viewing stones, Kusumono, and Suiseki, and other accent plants that can stand on their own. That's another big part of the art. But yeah, once a month we meet at the, usually it's the first Saturday of the month at 11 a.m. You can check out nepabonsai.com. That'll get you the schedule. Once a year we have our open house, which is coming up next Saturday. And then throughout the year, we have different meetings. Each meeting's different. Sometimes members put on a demonstration. Sometimes we just have a bring your own tree to get advice on day. Sometimes we bring in guest artists. We have an annual picnic and auction, which is really fun. You can get some good deals on stuff. And we raise a decent amount of money for the club. But it all comes down to, you know, our big show at the end of August.
The nice thing is that you are able to give people a sense of, oh, this is quite remarkable, right?
Yeah, and being a horticulturalist, working at Keller's day in and day out with plants, I feel like I can add a lot in terms of Kusumono, which is, you know, basically plantings of wild plants or plantings of tropical plants that mimic, you know, landscapes or that go well with some sort of bonsai setting. So the skills that I'm learning there and caring for long-term for both outdoor and indoor plants helps me impart that wisdom to, you know, someone in my group that might want to learn about horticulture a little bit better. So that it definitely helps.
And Carl, you've been teaching for quite some time.
Yeah, probably 10, 15 years or so.
And people can, if they come to the open house and say, I'm hooked, I want to do it, give me a tree, what do I do next?
We can set up a private lesson with me to do stuff. So beautiful Nana junipers that we can start with. But I'll have a bunch of other tropical stuff that can do okay inside for next week. And I should have a 101 class the day after the open house. So if you want to come back the next day and listen for about an hour, hour and a half, we'll go through the history of the art, how to get started a little on a little more in-depth level. That'll be Sunday, probably about 11 or noon. I'll have that up on the website, too, and there'll be info on that at the open house.
I was going to say, too, that in terms of, like, the public, we love people coming in and talking about, you know, horticulture and trees. And I think that's one of the things that kind of makes us different is the one-on-one attention that we give to every customer that comes in. They may never have purchased a plant before. They may never have purchased a tree before or a Suiseki viewing stones. So although they may never have any experience with those things, they can come in and sit down and talk with us, and we're always happy to teach.
Yeah, so you'll see there'll be a lot of the club members on hand, so feel free to ask questions. Hopefully you'll find one of those club members that wants to show you their tree. You'll be like, oh, I've been working on this for so long, or, you know, I just got this. That gets people excited too. So that, yeah, there's all kind of information available to get you started. You don't have to be into the art. You know, art needs people who create and then people who appreciate. And then people who buy, too. So it doesn't matter if you have trees or not, or you just think it's kind of cool. Come on over. Some of our club members have one tree, and some have 300 trees. So it's very versatile group. But you'll see all trees from young, just created, to trees that have been around for 50, 100 years. And we're always happy to teach you the story or tell you how to get involved in that. I think we're talking about teaching and everything, and James mentioned, you know, it's good to reflect on a tree by yourself. I love going home tonight. I'll probably go work in my garden on a tree or two. I've been working on one for my friend. He's traded me for some bourbon. He doesn't know yet, but I've just not had the time. I finally get the time to go home and just be by myself in my garden. That's great. But at the end of the day, when I'm at the shop throughout the week, I enjoy people coming down. I get more energized talking and working on trees with other people. It keeps me fueled.
Remind us how we can find you on August 23rd.
Yeah, the show will go 10 a.m. till 2 p.m. Next Saturday, August 23rd, over at Keller's Garden Center, West Pittston or Exeter, 7 Kern Street. Just type in Keller's Garden Center. It should get you on the GPS pretty easily. Diagonal across from Blue Ribbon.
Blue Ribbon ice cream? Ooh.
Do ice cream and bonsai. That sounds like a great day.
We spoke with Carl Achammer Jr., founding member, and James Gavern, president of the Northeast Pennsylvania Bonsai Society, speaking with us about the art and about the 2025 Northeast Pennsylvania Bonsai Society Open House, taking place on Saturday, August 23rd in Exeter, which is in the Wyoming Valley, up a little bit from Wyoming, up from Kingston. And it's, as we heard across from the celebrated Blue Ribbon Ice Cream Parlor, it's Keller's Garden Center, 7 Kern Street. And the hours, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., and the address on the web, nepabonsai.com, nepabonsai.com, B-O-N-S-A-I.